the killing will even get worse unless we find a way to actually stop it.
Welcome, Dr. Nolene Hazer, to In Conversation.
May, thank you for doing this interview.
How do you think you will be able to help stop the violence and the killing in Myanmar?
Well, it has been 1 year since the 1st of February 2021. And violence and brutality, in fact, have intensified and widened. And the impact on the civilian population has been actually disastrous. And it is critical that we find a way out. Every day I hear cries from people who are in touch with me asking for help. So what can we do? And the first thing is to ensure that all sides agree to the de-escalation of violence. Currently, what I am finding is that there is widespread resistance, and both sides have actually hardened in their position, thinking that their side will actually prevail. And the people who are caught in this conflict, unfortunately, are the civilians. And if I look at the figures that are before me, 25 million people in Myanmar have now fallen into poverty. 14.4 million people are in need of humanitarian assistance. And if we just look at the displacement figures, we have at the start of the conflict till now, at the end of 2021, it was 320,000 people internally displaced. But today is about 405,000 people. And that's internal displacement. And you have a situation where there are about now 16,000 people who have crossed the borders because of the conflict in the Chin states, in Sagaing, in Kayin, and so on. So this is not sustainable for everyone, not just Myanmar, but all the border countries as well. So there is an interest for everybody to try to end the conflict. I've called for a humanitarian pause. I asked originally for a national ceasefire. That's not going to happen. But if we take the needs of the people that I've just described and who have been asking for help, if we can actually take their interests first and ensure that there is what I call a humanitarian plus pause. So we have to have actually humanitarian pause and humanitarian corridors in targeted areas, including those that are not in control by the Tatmadaw. And what people on the ground want is actually concrete results that can improve their lives. And I think the humanitarian pause and the humanitarian corridor is one way to do it, because people are suffering. And therefore, the protection issue is critical. Access to COVID-19 vaccines would be critical, access to food, access to medicine. And this is something that will at least build some amount of trust. Currently, there is no trust There is no trust whatsoever. So even if we want to create the conditions for talks about talks, we have to start building the building blocks of trust.
You talk about this humanitarian corridor, but there is this lack of trust. The Myanmar citizens don't believe that whatever humanitarian aid is going into Myanmar will indeed be given to the people who truly need it. How do you ensure that?
This is the thing. That's why it's so important now to work with ASEAN. And I'm working very closely with the ASEAN envoy. And what we are trying to do is to bring everybody onto the table to kind of discuss this. And I've spoken to all the affected people. In fact, I'm now 6 weeks into my job, and I have consulted literally all the different stakeholders. And they are willing to come to the table if we can ensure certain amount of trust, at least on the humanitarian side. And I think that this is where we need to go if we are to even build trust and reconciliation, not for the talks, but talks about the talks.
Are you going to be the interlocutor?
I am not going to be the interlocutor alone. But what I have done is this. I have stressed that this has got to be a Myanmar-led process with all the stakeholders reflecting the will of the people and the need of the people, and that it has to be supported by regional unity. At the core of this regional unity is, of course, the ASEAN 5-point consensus. But not just ASEAN, but also all the border countries, so India, China, Thailand, Bangladesh, Laos, and then, of course, I would include also Japan. To have a united regional approach that is supported by a coordinated international strategy. And this means the Security Council that I've just addressed on Friday. So it's not anyone, you're not going to have a saviour. The people are their own saviour. So let's put it straight. ASEAN, in the 5-point consensus, talks about stopping the violence, creating a humanitarian framework, and also to bring people into a more comprehensive engagement. And here, the ASEAN envoy, the ASEAN chair and me have discussed this. I have been in very deep conversation with them, and we are planning, ASEAN is planning humanitarian meeting where all the different players will be brought onto the table. Currently, they have their own framework, but that's why the UN is so critical, because the UN ASEAN framework and partnership that we have shown at the time of Cyclone Nargis, but even throughout the world, that we have the capacities and we do know how to move in terms of the humanitarian space.
Dr. Hazer, you've said that the military is not legitimate. So do you support the call for the global community to officially recognize the civilian-formed national unity government?
Well, that depends on the member states. That's not for me to decide. And that is not something that the UN will make any decision on. That depends on the member state. But so far, the elected government is the NLD. And the military, when I say that they're not legitimate, it doesn't mean that they have no role. They have a legitimate role, but they are not the legitimate government at this time, as far as the election results have shown. If we begin to build trust, I think we have to stop the de-escalation into deeper and deeper violence.
You have said before that the bottom line is to stop the killing, but the killing continues as we speak.
The killing will even get worse unless we find a way to actually stop it.
Because there is no trust, you have the Myanmar young citizens taking up arms and forming the resistance movement. And they are not ready to put down their arms at any time because their final goal is to get rid of the military regime. Will you think that that can be given some kind of a leeway to them simply because they are fighting in self-defense, as they say?
Well, at the end of the day, the military currently is part of the problem. They need to be part of the solution as well. And if you look at what is happening, I mean, I've spoken to the resistance forces, and what they are trying to do is to put enough pressure on the military to come to the table to talk about a future that is sustainable, that is viable, that is peaceful, and that is democratic, that reflects the will of the people as expressed by the 2020 elections based on the constitution. So the will of the people is very clear. And what they want is to be able to negotiate that. In fact, they have even gone a lot further by talking about a federal union of democracy, a federal democratic union. And so this is a coming together of a unity that we've not seen before, which is of the not the minority ethnic groups, but the majority ethnic groups. I know that many young people, especially the young, they're willing to die fighting for a total political transformation. Any political transformation requires a process, and it's not going to happen overnight. And therefore, I want them to have something to live for, not to die for. And they need to go to negotiate what this power sharing could look like over a long term. And they have to be at the table.
How soon can we see that happening, given the fact that 1 year on into this coup right now, and we haven't seen any real tangible results?
That is why I think having the partnership with the UN is absolutely critical. Because ASEAN on its own, obviously, has been struggling with the implementation of the five-point consensus. We need the support, again, of the regional countries to make that happen, but also a synergetic relationship with the United Nations. So I am in very close consultation with both the ASEAN envoy, the ASEAN chair, and I have spoken to all the foreign ministers of ASEAN, and including some of the heads of states of ASEAN as well, together with the people in the Security Council, our leaders in the Security Council. And this is critical. We need to put pressure. We need to put pressure on everyone in order to stop this. Basically, it's really falling into a bottomless pit of violence if we do not stop. And that is of nobody's interest, because already it's not just about lives, it's about livelihoods as well. People cannot survive under this type of a condition. And what we have found is that people are using what I call negative coping strategies, because the illicit economy have just grown beyond our expectations. And in fact, if you look at the drug trade, the illegal mining of jewellery and so on, but also of timber, right? And the trafficking that is going on, it is of nobody's interest. And the displacement issue also is of nobody's interest.
When will you be able to get into Myanmar?
Well, I would like the ASEAN envoy to go in first, because this is really, ASEAN should be the driving force, I feel, precisely because Myanmar is a member of ASEAN, and the UN believe that we should try very hard to use all our regional capacities. But ASEAN is a member of the United Nations, all the member states are, and we want to strengthen the regional response. So my job is to work in synergy with the ASEAN envoy, but also to make sure that I'm the eyes and ears of the people on the ground.
Has the military allowed you to visit?
Well, they are in consultation with me, and all the signs are positive, let me put it that way.
Have you asked to meet with Aung San Suu Kyi?
I have not asked yet, but let's see what happens. I am in negotiation.
Do you want to meet with her?
Of course, we all want to meet with her, because at the end of the day, we have to make sure that she's well. And she's still very much, I mean, the NLD and Aung San Suu Kyi, they are very much a part of the stakeholders.
Many officials, many diplomats who have asked to meet with Aung San Suu Kyi have been turned down. And also, that seems to be a deal breaker with the military. How likely do you think they'll grant you that permission?
For me, I will ask, but I, at the end of the day, my interest is actually the people of Myanmar. So I have always, in all the work that I've done, I have focused on the most vulnerable people first.
But in having a dialogue to try and resolve this Myanmar crisis, do you think that it's necessary to include Aung San Suu Kyi in this?
I think she would be a really positive force in this. So let's see whether I can convince the military about it.
But does she need to be in this dialogue?
She should be in this dialogue.
Why?
Because she has the love of the people. She has strong influence. The NLD, where the party is still recognized. And she has influence.
Think we can actually move forward from here?
Everyone would agree on moving forward on the humanitarian track. And so let's use that track as much as we can, and also to ensure that we create humanitarian corridors. But I would go even beyond that, because we also have to make sure that there is a people's economy functioning. Because I know from all the reports that I have gotten that people are struggling economically, and therefore people's livelihoods are very much at stake. We cannot have a situation where 50% of the population, 25 million people, are now living in poverty. And there, we need to ensure that somehow there is a functioning people's economy at the community level. So let's try to do what we can to move along that. And I feel that if we bring the UN and the ASEAN together, the implementation will actually move a lot further. And I intend to see how best we can do that.
But the military has always had a negative reception towards the United Nations. They have actually accused the United Nations Special Envoys, Special Rapporteurs, of being very biased, very unfair and inaccurate in their assessment of the Myanmar crisis. How do you think this is going to change?
Well, the thing is that they have different relationships with the UN. And I must say that I was rather accepted during the time of Cyclone Nargis, and the UN was central. It wasn't just me. They know what the UN can do. They know. They may not like what the UN stand for, but those are the norms and standards of the United Nations. And if you want to be a member state of the United Nations, there are norms and standards that you have to agree with. And sovereignty comes with responsibility to the people.
You mentioned that there is a slight acceptance towards you. Do you feel as though it's because you are a fellow Southeast Asian citizen and that's the reason why perhaps they might be more receptive towards you?
Well, that may be so, but it goes beyond that. I think it's the relationships that I have built. I was very involved during the Cyclone Nargis period, but even beyond, trying to help the country when it was opening up, trying to ensure that they understand what is human security and human development, paying attention to rural poverty, making sure that they can address the difficulties of their people, putting their people first. And in fact, I even managed to bring Professor Joseph Stiglitz into Myanmar at the time when they were struggling to come up with their economic strategy. So there is a certain amount of trust, maybe not so much with this current team of people at the top, but definitely with President Thein Sein's group and his reformist generals. I have had a very close relationship advising them. So they do know me well enough, and they trust me. So, but this is it doesn't mean that because I know that team that this is going to be an easy task with this group of generals that I do not know. But I do have people from the Thein Sein period that are in the SAARC, and this is the State Administration Council. And so hopefully some new conversations can happen. I honestly believe that at the end of the day, people care about what happens to the country. So let's start from there. What is it that that can unite people? Nobody wants to see a broken up Myanmar.
Very, very briefly, I know you're at the beginning of your term. At the end of your term, what is the one thing that you want people, particularly the Myanmar citizens, to remember your work?
I would really be very pleased, not my work, but their work, that if they can come together and that they can actually try to put in the building blocks. I know it's not going to be easy. Nothing, if they are about a political transformation and if they are about effective democratic governance, it is a long-term process. They have to start the process now and they have to keep at it. And I am there as a friend to see them to the very end.
Dr. Nolene Hazer, thank you for speaking with me on In Conversation.
Thank you, May.